We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
Back, time for another edition of the Carolina Insider, and oh boy, Adam has a handsome robe on. There's some incense blowing about, candles are on. It's time to pod after dark.
The only light in this mobile headquarters is provided by the front lamp of a train.
Oh man, we're excited to be with you. And it is a pod after dark. We're coming to you right after the Virginia Tech game in the Smith Center on Monday night. As we do this, you'll be hearing it on Tuesday morning. And no guests today, but I promise it's going to be the last time for a while that that happens. We have a bunch of great guests lined up. And so assuming that those actually occur, then we're going to have some awesome guests coming up in the very near future. But you just get Adam and me today. But, Adam, it's a good time to talk because the Tar Heels coming off one of their more impressive performances of the season, topping Virginia Tech 103-82. And, I mean, on face value, that is impressive in and of itself. But then when you consider the fact that the Tar Heels had 18 points through the first 12 minutes of the game, then I think it becomes even more impressive what the Heels were able to do offensively the rest of the way. As rolling downhill in a positive way, maybe as Carolina's been all season long, for that 20-0 run to close the first half. Virginia Tech did make a bucket late, so 20-2 run to close the first half, that the Tar Heels ended up getting the win.
Carolina just did everything right after those first 12 minutes or so. And Virginia Tech started hot, and that seems like almost a completely different game. When you think about it now, yeah. They hit six of their first seven or something like that, three-pointers, and you thought, uh-oh, is this Louisville part two? But no, the Tar Heels were mature enough to kind of turn things back around, and a lot of that maturity provided by a freshman during that key stretch.
I think the Louisville game is relevant to bring up because it did kind of start the same way. You know, Virginia Tech was just making shots from all over the place, made a bunch of threes. The Tar Heels weren't necessarily playing poorly, but we're finding the deficit kind of growing and growing as the Hokies continued to drop in shots. And Carolina was able to withstand it and then get back in it. And Adam, I think two things really played a big role in them getting that run started. One was that Virginia Tech got in some foul trouble. And two of their good players, Alexander Walker, who had made three threes at that point, and Justin Robinson, who's their senior point guard and multi-year starter, both picked up three fouls. And then also, the defensive effort and intensity led by the freshman that you're talking about, I thought that was the combination of those two things is what started that run, and then it just snowballed.
Yeah, Carolina was able to get out and run a little bit because of that defense, and that sort of unlocked the offense and especially the perimeter shooting because, man, Carolina couldn't hit the broad side of the Smith Center early.
One of its first 12, Carolina was. Then they made 14 of their next 19 three-pointers. That's insane.
And I think it was like 14 of 17 when the regular rotation was in. I mean, that's hard to do in an empty gym.
Yeah.
So definitely you get the whole Roy Williams, well, it looks better when the ball's going in the basket aspect of that. But Carolina was creating some of that with the way they were playing.
All three freshmen. Now, I mean, White and Little's numbers are enormous, but Leaky Black, and not just because we love Leaky. I mean, those three were on the court together for a large majority of that spurt, and they all did stuff to make it happen, whether it was White hitting some threes, Black had a steal and a nice assist, Little was just active and, you know, got way up in the air for a couple of rebounds and things like that. Those three guys weren't the only ones, but man, they were a big part of that run.
Well, they were the only ones between Carolina down 4 and Carolina up 10.
Yeah.
They scored every point. They got every rebound. They had every assist.
Yeah.
They had every steal. They had every block. The three freshmen did every single statistical entry in the play-by-play in that span when Carolina was plus 14. That's pretty hard to do against a good ACC opponent. I know Carolina's playing at home, but I think that still says something about how active they are and how much better they're understanding the game. Now, you should not bank on Little and White scoring 50 in every game forward. They're going to have some, like, 4 of 12 shooting days. But White, I think, has kind of been there all along, and we were talking before we started. I mean, White's that guy who the shot clock gets to 5, and you think, well, he's going to somehow get this ball to the rim. I don't know how, but he'll do it, and it may go in. And Little, I thought, made some great points on the radio after the game talking about how much more comfortable he was and said he'd been asking a lot of questions and that he felt like that had really helped him, especially defensively, just in kind of knowing what to do, which, of course, in turn helps him offensively because you're not going to be on the floor if you're not playing defense. And so I think that's a credit to him and being willing to admit he doesn't know every single thing. And, I mean, those three guys were great. And, you know, I think they've been really good against some really good ACC competition, both at home and on the road. And it's only the middle part of January, so there's more in there still.
Coby White, even with the 4-point performance against Louisville, was Carolina's leading scorer in conference play. And that's going to still hold true after a team-high 27 in this game. And I think that says two things, Adam. One, how well he has been playing. And then also how important he is moving forward. Because the one game that he didn't play very well, didn't play as many minutes because of foul trouble, was the Louisville game, and we saw what happened. And it wasn't all because of Coby White. But he is just becoming incredibly, incredibly important to what the Tar Heels want to do and are able to do. Because of a couple different things. One, how well he can score the ball. He's been Carolina's defensive player of the game the last two games. I don't know if he's going to get it for this game or not, the Virginia Tech game. His rebounding, he has 17 rebounds now in the last three games. And his numbers tonight, 27 points, 7 boards, 6 assists, 4 steals. He led Carolina in every one of those categories.
He's getting close to Ty Lawson status in terms of his importance to everything he does and how much different things look when he goes out. He just drives everything. And according to Jody Zeugner, who everyone knows as the Tar Heel Sports Network statistical guru, he thinks no Carolina player ever has reached the numbers you just said in one single game. Now, steals have only been kept since around 80 or so. And so if you take the steals out and then you're left with, oh, sorry, just the 27, 7, and 6, Only four other Carolina players have done that, and their names are Tyler Hansbrough, Charlie Scott, Walter Davis, Joseph Forte.
Hmm. Whoever, decent players.
Every single one of those guys in the rafters.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good game against, again, a top 10 ACC opponent known for their backcourt play. Kobe White's just really good. But I tell you what, my favorite thing he did on Monday was when Garrison Brooks had that three-point play, and Kobe White looked like he had just won the Ed McMahon lottery. Ed McMahon had arrived at his front door, and Kobe White was out there doing – he was out there doing I think they're called, like, herkies or something. You know, where, like, that cheerleading thing where you, like, jump up and touch your toes? I just did it. I hate that everyone on the podcast –
Wait, there's a pike. That's when you do your legs out in front of you. There's a Russian where you split your legs out.
Yeah, he was doing Russians at the free throw line after Garrison Brooks got the three-point play in the first half. And then here came Nasir Little, who, like, he was trying to do the Russians, but he's not quite as flexible. It was like a half Russian. So I just love how much they seem to love to play. And, man, they're going to be fun. Again, it's only mid-January. They're going to get better.
Nasir Little had, I think, fair to say, his best game as a Tar Heel. I mean, was his scoring high, and his previous was against Elon, and no offense to Elon, but Virginia Tech is better than they are. But it's been coming. I mean, and we've talked about it some, and again, you hope it's going to be maybe not 23 and however many rebounds.
Six.
He had six rebounds and three assists. It may not be that every single night, but you're hoping to see some more of that consistency, and I think that you are starting to see that. And, Adam, it really has become, because Nasir Little has finally either realized or has the confidence to do the fact that he can just kind of get by or over or through most guys that are going to try and guard him. And he knocked in a couple of threes, which is great, and you hope that that confidence continues to build from out there. And, of course, having that diversity in his game, it will be important for him this year and moving forward. But right now, he's just said, you know what? There aren't very many guys in the ACC who I can't just jump over and score over, and he's starting to show that on a pretty consistent basis.
Yeah, I don't think you can count on 2 3-pointers every night. I think that was the bonus that you got on Monday. But what you can count on and what you can pretty consistently produce on a regular basis is going to the free throw line. And he went 7 times on Monday, made all 7. He's not going to do that every night, but he can make 5 or 6.
13 of 15 last 2 games at the line.
And he shot more free throws in conference play than anybody else on the team. I think it's now 26 in 6 games. More free throws than anybody else on the roster, and way up from, I think he took 31 in 13 non-conference games. So he was at about 2 per game, and all of a sudden he's over 4 per game. That's because he's going to the rim, and teams can't stop him. They can foul him, but they cannot consistently, so far, we haven't found a physical specimen who can kind of stand in his way and say, you're not doing this. If only we knew someone who was a physical specimen. I love the play in the second half. It was right after he had made a bad play. He dribbled right into that half-court trap and then picked up the ball, and everyone could see what was coming, and it was a turnover, and you saw it coming. A couple seconds after that, he gets the ball. He kind of waves off Seventh Woods and decides he's going to bring the ball up.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Tech didn't turn around.
Oh, I know this play.
And he just, like, turned on the jet engines, and Luke May did a nice job of kind of sealing his guy out of the way, and Little just went straight to the rim. And he can do that. And I thought that was a good sign that even so soon after kind of making a mistake, he still had the confidence to realize, okay, I've got the numbers. They're not looking. They don't respect me. I'm going to the rim. And when teams have to worry about that, that's going to open up all kinds of other things.
Again, the qualifier that Kobe White and Nasir Little aren't going to score 50 every single night. However, the other part of that is all of a sudden Luke May has 14 points and only needed 8 shots to get it instead of needing 16 shots to get 14 points. Now, granted, he also made 4 3-pointers. That's clearly going to help. Kenny Williams, 7 shots. 10 points, 4 assists, just 1 turnover, 2 of 5 from 3, which you'll take every single game. Drew a big charge. Yeah, I mean, so those guys were able to find ways, still being a huge part of what Carolina did, when someone else was being the dominant scorer for that night.
I thought Kenny Williams had one of his best games of the year in terms of everything he did, and he was talking the entire night, not talking junk, but talking to his teammates. And remember, we talked after the Louisville game about how he said he wanted to consciously be different leadership-wise. And so he said after the Virginia Tech game that what he's trying to do is just be more positive. And he said there was a play, I think late in the first half, where Little got confused about what to do when he was the four, because he doesn't know that position as well. And so you looked out there, and Kenny Williams kind of had his arm around him and was talking to him, and he said what he was telling him was, okay, we get it. You don't know the four perfectly. It's fine. Let's get it right next time. But for now, let's move on and go make a play because you're plenty good enough. It's just one thing. That's what you need your senior to do. And I think it shows a lot about Kenny Williams that, A, he was willing to recognize maybe he wasn't doing that enough, and, B, that he was able to consciously make the change to make the team better. Now, it's easy to do that when you're up by 20.
Sure.
So the real test is going to come when Carolina's on the road somewhere and the other team goes on a 14-0 run. Let's see how it goes then. But Monday, I thought that was a really impressive night from Kenny Williams.
All right, just two more individuals I want to mention, and then we can do whatever else you want to do about this game before we move on. Brandon Robinson didn't have a huge statistical day. He had actually didn't even score, had a rebound, two assists, no turnovers. But I thought he had one of the biggest plays of the game because he drew the charge on Justin Robinson, the Virginia Tech point guard, in the first half. That was Robinson's third foul, and at that point, Buzz Williams had to take him out for the remainder of the half. So, again, just somebody kind of finding his role, and while there are some nights where Brandon Robinson is going to make three threes like he did a couple games ago, there's also this game where maybe he doesn't do as much, but he still found something important to do to help Carolina win. And then secondly, you know, Garrison Brooks only finished with 12 points and 5 boards, but he had 8 points really early when all the threes were not going in for the Tar Heels. And it was Brooks who at least kept scoring a little bit to help Carolina stay within shouting distance and be down only 9 instead of like 17 or something when Virginia Tech was so blazing hot at the beginning of the game.
Robinson, 2 assists, no turnovers. I mean, I think if you get that from him every night, you're fine. And kind of like Little, the 3-pointers are a bonus. If you get those, that's good. You're even better. But come in, don't turn the ball over, play defense, draw a charge. That's a win. Brooks, I mean, you said only 12 points and 5 rebounds.
Yeah, I didn't mean it like it was nothing.
Yeah, I think 12 points and 5, if you could get that from him every night, maybe a few more rebounds, because Carolina only out-rebounded Virginia Tech 35-32. You know, Virginia Tech's not a great rebounding team. Kobe White led the team in rebounds. A lot of different reasons for that. But, I think you're right. Brooks kept the Tar Heels kind of within sight of Virginia Tech, because if you had allowed them to get away and they got some confidence, they seem to be a team that kind of thrives on things going well. And it sort of builds for them, and the Tar Heels didn't let that happen.
I thought post-game, the last thing I wanted to go to. Roy Williams was asked, which team is more the Tar Heels? Is it Gonzaga, Virginia Tech Tar Heels, or is it Louisville Tar Heels? Obviously, the answer is somewhere in between. But I think you have seen in the Gonzaga and the Virginia Tech, and maybe even the state game, I think you could probably throw in there, the things that Carolina has to do to play closer to Monday night. And that is play with high effort on the defensive end. They need to shoot the ball well, of course, and they need to take care of the ball, which they did other than kind of a couple of brain-dead stretches in the second half when it was like a 20-point game. But if they take care of the ball, they seem to be a good enough offensive team to score at a pretty efficient pace when they're giving themselves a chance to score. We've said this before. And when they play with that level of defensive energy, it's just really impressive. And I think they can be as good as anybody, but they have to continue to do those type of things. And it doesn't hurt when you're raining in threes.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only cautionary point at this exact juncture is that the schedule has been favorable.
Oh, sure.
And I think you haven't played Virginia yet. You haven't played Duke. And who knows about Florida State, because they're just like they always are. They could beat you by 20 or lose by 20 on any given night. But I know for sure they've got some stuff that gives Carolina trouble.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, we can easily say, just by looking at it on paper, that the Tar Heels, the way the schedule broke out, got a favorable draw. Florida State once in Chapel Hill. Virginia Tech once in Chapel Hill. Virginia once in Chapel Hill. Syracuse once in Chapel Hill. I mean, you know you're going home and home with State. You know you're going home and home with Duke every year. I mean, that's pretty favorable. And then the teams that you're only playing once on the road are teams that Carolina is probably a little bit better than. Of course, it's never easy to win on the road, but at Wake Forest, at Boston College, although keep an eye, I think the Eagles are getting better and they're getting a little healthier. At Georgia Tech, and again, these are not guaranteed wins. Nothing is. But those are teams that the Tar Heels are likely, just personnel-wise, a little better than right now. So there is no doubt that that schedule looks good. But also, you also have to give credit to Carolina. I mean, six games, and they're 5-1. That's about right.
33% of the way into the ACC season, you're sitting there tied for first place.
No, you're in first place. Tar Heels are by themselves right now as of this moment, but right. There was a six-way tie at 4-1 coming into Monday night, so somebody else is going to win, of course.
And I think really, I think you pretty much feel like you ought to be 6-0. I mean, the one loss, you got smoked, but you just didn't show up. And so I think the next chance for Carolina to really put a good credential on the resume is that trip to Louisville next weekend.
Well, their next two games are on the road, at Georgia Tech and at Louisville. And I do think the Georgia Tech game, Adam, is in an interesting spot because Carolina has laid some pretty stinky stinkers after some good wins this year. You know, beat UCLA, and of course we know everything's happened with UCLA, but then next game was Michigan. Beat Gonzaga, next game was Kentucky. One at State, next game was Louisville. So now you've got this chance to follow it up. Now, it's 8 days. It's going to be 8 days later. It's in Atlanta where there will be a lot of Tar Heel fans, but it's just kind of – it's always just a weird environment there. Carolina's taken, quite honestly, better teams down to Atlanta before and lost to teams – to worse Georgia Tech teams. It's just, can Carolina go, okay, that was a really nice performance and a nice win. Now let's build off of that and keep getting better. Instead of going, would you showing up and be like, hey, you guys see what we did last Monday against Virginia Tech? That was awesome, wasn't it?
Well, and you've had, the way the schedule's fallen, you've had games to kind of reinforce that you're getting better. So Nasir Little's been able to look at the box score and say, oh, I see what I'm doing is paying off. Well, now he's going to have 7 days, and so not just him, the rest of the team. 7 days where there's nothing to measure it by other than you have to feel like you're getting better in practice. You're doing something every day to get better. And sometimes it's easier when you have that reinforcement and you've got, you know, your friends are getting in touch and go, oh, you're scoring a ton of points. You're doing great. Well, nobody's going to see anything for the next week. So nobody's going to be telling you you're doing great. Nobody's going to be telling you how much better you look. You're going to have to do it for yourself.
Thank you, Adam. You're talking about.
So I think that's kind of a challenge, too, for a maturing team and one that's got some younger players.
So what I thought we'd do, unless do you have anything else from the Virginia Tech game?
Jones, my key's the crowd.
My key's the crowd, Adam.
The crowd was very good on Monday night.
Adam, I've said it before. Well, you know what I thought was pretty interesting? And you could see it on people's faces. So Virginia Tech started the game super hot. And they were a little showy about it. I mean, Justin Robinson hit a three, said something to the Tar Heel crowd.
Yeah.
Ahmed Hill hit a three, said something to the Tar Heel bench. Alexander Walker did some, I don't even want to describe it because it might be obscene, I don't know, some motion with his fingers after he hit a couple of threes. And then you've got Buzz Williams just going crazy over there. You've got the bench like, anytime they knock a ball, like, even just free, even if they don't get a turnover, like, they all like, get up and, like, are yelling at the dude who lost the ball. So their energy and aggressiveness, and by there I mean Virginia Tech, it's like it angered. It was like the Carolina crowd were all of a sudden were like, wait a second, you can't do that here. And so then you had all – it just – in addition to it being a big game in the ACC and two good teams and – all that stuff. It was like there was a little extra bravado all of a sudden from the Carolina crowd. And I know this is the sixth ACC game of the year, But for that stretch, and it wasn't even Carolina hadn't even gone on the big run yet. There was like a bunch of close calls, and the, you know, the refs were, you know, both teams kind of thought that stuff wasn't going for them referee wise, and but it was like it all of a sudden it was like, whoa, this is conference play now, and it just felt like it for the first time.
21,148 in the Smith Center on a school night against Virginia Tech. That's now the fourth straight game Carolina's won at home against a higher-ranked ACC opponent. If that was happening in other places, oh, it's the graveyard where rankings go to die. You don't go into the Smith Center and emerge with a win against a lower-ranked team. But because it's the Smith Center, oh, well, Carolina's supposed to beat Virginia Tech. Well, it's not always like that. So I do think the crowd, the building deserve a little bit of credit. Of course, the players and coaches are the ones doing it, but yet again, as we have mentioned before, not enough credit to the home court environment and the home court advantage that's created.
So what I thought we'd do, since we don't have a guest on the show today, thought we'd let you listen to the post game from both Roy Williams and Nasir Little after this game. So this is just Coach Williams' press conference after the game, and then Adam had a one-on-one with Nasir for the radio. Wanted to let you listen to both of those. And obviously you can skip right through it if you've already heard it. But since we don't have a guest, figured that'd be something that you might be interested in hearing after this big win for the Tar Heels. So we're going to go to that, come back, and get to some more stuff here on the Carolina Insider.
All right, all you old-timers, what's the first thing I'm going to say? When the ball goes in the basket. You know, we start out, as you know, 1-for-12. And I was so mad at what we were doing. Garrison was 5-for-6 at halftime, and everybody's getting fat and happy shooting the ball. But I've said all year, I think we're good shooters. After that, we make 14 of our next 19. And it is. It's funny that I have to say it all the time, but I really do believe that. Our defense got better when we started shooting the ball in the basket, too. We started forcing a few more turnovers. They turned it over in the first half and gave us a little bit of edge. We tried to turn it over in the second half way too much, but made a bunch of threes there. Garrison, again, 5-for-6, and he only shot one time in the second half. But I think his defense was good for us as well. Had to congratulate them. They've only got like eight guys. They only had eight guys warm up. It's hard to do that over the course of the game. It's fast pace that we like to play. They like to play fast without the bodies. And it helped us, no question. It helped us for Robinson and Alexander Walker to get three fouls in the first half. That was part of the big run we had at the last part of the first half. But I like five guys in double figures. I like 25 assists on 36 baskets. I don't like 10 turnovers in the second half, but I really enjoyed watching the tapes of Buzz's club. I think he's done a fantastic job with short numbers and not enough size out there. I was worried to death about the game because I think that they're really, really good. And they showed it the first few minutes, and then we went crazy for a while, and then that was it after that.
What do you feel is closer to the true identity of this team? Games like this in Gonzaga or
Louisville? Somewhere in between, but I hope it's a hell of a lot closer to games like this in Gonzaga. It's where I'm going to have more gray hair, not as many, one of the two. But, you know, see, I really don't know. I'd like to be sitting up here and tell you all these things, but I asked them to compete today as hard as we possibly could. I talked to them about how hard Virginia Tech was going to play, and that's a compliment to them, and told them that we'd better be able to match that and not expect the home crowd to do it. But I do like it when the ball goes in the basket, and I liked probably all except two or three shots in the first half. But, you know, if you're a shooter and you're going to shoot threes, you know what you're supposed to do? Make some of them. You know, you start 1-for-12, you're going to lose for everybody. And so I think they sped us up a little bit with their activity, and we rushed some of those shots early in the first half. But other than that, you know, Kobe's 5-for-11, Luke's 4-for-5, Sears 2-for-3. You know, he hadn't shot it well in a long time, but I really felt good for him about those two threes. And he took the ball to the basket, and the last three games, he's started feeling a little more comfortable. And his defensive grades the last two games have been the best defensive grades he's had all year, so that might be giving him a little confidence too.
Roy, after falling behind by 9 early, the freshman accounting for the next 18 points. Is that group starting to kind of shed that freshman label?
Well, what are we? 15-4, so it's 19 games. That's That's quite a few of the opportunities to go and play. You shouldn't still be a freshman. I think that Kobe's done some really good things for us this year. Nasir has been amazing the last three games. I mean, to ask how many fouls he had tonight, he had zero. At Miami the other day, he had four and only played 15 or 16 minutes. So it helps when he's not in foul trouble. And Leakey hadn't played as well as I want him. But how about first plays in, he doubles down on the post and steals the ball, and we go to the other end. He's the one that found Kobe on a three during that stretch there. So I think all three of our freshmen are going to be very good players. And I think that they'll continue to get better and better.
Right, you mentioned the stretch where Justin Robinson was out. Why were you guys able to be so successful with him on the bench? What changed?
Well, he's one of their better players. You know, he's one of my favorite players. But, I mean, he's a load. He pushes the pace. He distributes the ball. He scores himself. What'd he end up with? 17 points, 6 assists. He's 3-for-4 from three-point line. I mean, he's really a good player. You take Luke out of our lineup or somebody like that, we're not as good either. But him getting the third foul, and I thought he should have gotten the fourth one on the play that they didn't call the foul, but he's competitive as all get out and tried to block Garrison's shot.
What has been the difference in the series?
I think just getting more comfortable. I've been telling you guys all along that he's coming, but it's just some guys, it takes them a little while to get more comfortable than other guys. But the defensive end of the floor is what I'll point to again. It's best grades were the last two games, and I would bet he's probably, I know a couple of times tonight he tagged and got back to his man, so I think he'll probably have a better defensive grade this time too.
Where is Kobe in the balance between creating his own shot, distributing? Where is he and where would you like him to?
I'd like for him to still score like what he have 27 tonight, but I'd like him to do it without three turnovers. So you're exactly right. He's in that mix. Sometimes, you know, one of the turnovers right in front of our bench was a silly turnover. The bounce pass he tried to make to Luke in traffic was a silly. So I'd like him to get rid of those turnovers. And still, he's offensive-minded, which I'm not against that. Kendall Marshall was one of the great point guards I've had, and he was pass first, second, third, and fourth. Ty Lawson was one of the great point guards, and he was shoot or pass, and that's the way I want Kobe to be. But he has some speed to push the ball, and he still has not pushed at the pace that I think he will eventually push it. Their two of their best five players were on the bench, so that helps. But other than that, the ball went in the basket. You know, it wasn't any secret plays or anything. The ball went in the basket.
When you see your team going crazy like that and seeing that run, 16-18, what is the coach thinking on the bench?
Run, clock, run. That's about all I can say. You know, I've seen us play like that, but not in enough spurts this year in games. We were really good at practice yesterday for a while. And it was a very short practice, and the same thing for the Miami game the day before practice, whereas the 2 days before the Louisville game, we stunk it up. So I think they've got to learn that what you do in practice does make a difference later on.
Did you feel your defense in certain things before you had a lot of turnovers tonight?
I don't know. You know, you always think you're getting better, but against Miami guys, we gave up 5 straight layups in the Miami game. And the good thing for us during that time period, they missed – one or maybe two of them, and we were making threes on the other end. So when they were scoring two, and Cam and Kenny were hitting threes. But we had, I think Kobe was a defensive player of the game. Nasir qualified, could have been. I forget who the other guy was. But in Louisville game, we didn't have anybody even close to qualifying. But that's been a while ago, but that sticks in my craw because we didn't really play, and they kicked our tails.
Alongside Nasir Little outside a happy Carolina locker room. Started out Virginia Tech really hot. What were y'all able to do defensively to cool them off, especially from the perimeter?
Initially, I don't think we had the urgency and the focus. I mean, a lot of guys were getting open shots and getting good looks, and they have a really good shooting team. You know, me personally, I came in, and I think I kind of brought some energy to the court, and I think we really started to pick things up on defense and really locked in and made our rotations and got out on the shooters.
There was a stretch in the first half where it went from up 1 to up, I think, 11, where freshmen had every single basket, every single assist, every single block, and every single steal. Yeah. What does that say about the work that the freshmen are doing and the maturity that's taking place?
I also think that's a testament to the older guys and Coach Williams and Coach Robinson, the entire coaching staff, getting us prepared for this moment, knowing that we're young, knowing that we're learning, and that's giving us the opportunity to grow and get better and to implement them in the games.
In what way do you feel like you're more prepared today than you were maybe a month ago?
just, you know, I've been watching a lot of film and just been asking a lot of questions, especially to improve my defense each game. You know, with each game, I'm getting more comfortable on the offensive side of the court. In practice, you know, they've kind of catered things to work on things that we need to get better on rather than just doing things. I think, you know, that says a lot about Coach Williams being willing to change to, you know, to make sure the team's getting better.
What kind of questions have you been asking?
I've been asking, you know, each time I'm watching defensive possession in practice, asking, so if I was in, where would I be or where should I be? And, you know, after I get off the court, when I'm on the sideline watching, I ask, what did I do wrong or what could I get better at? You know, just things like that, just making sure I'm in the right spot each time.
What's your comfort level with the shots you're getting now as compared to maybe a month ago?
Right now, I think, honestly, I think I just kind of let the game come to me. You know, initially, you know, I was getting too caught up in this media thing and, you know, I just started to block that out, you know, just make sure I'm not forcing anything and just let things come to me. And I think I've just been feeling more comfortable with that alone. And with each game, you know, I've just been getting better and better.
That's four straight wins over the last couple of years against higher-ranked ACC opponents. Mm-hmm. What does that say about this environment and the Smith Center crowd?
That says how good we can be, you know, and not just that. We have a great crowd, you know. We have a great basketball tradition at this school. And I think, you know, the crowd also helped us with that energy tonight for sure.
If you're a golfer, you've got to get to Pinehurst this fall. Gil Hance, redesign of Pinehurst number 4, opened in September, just a few scant months ago, to rave reviews. Forbes magazine calls it the newest must-play in the country. Be among the first to play. And you can learn more, get your tee time, at pinehurst.com. UNC Healthcare, Know Your Stats feature brought to you by UNC Healthcare and MyUNC Chart. You can keep track of your health stats with MyUNC Chart. Visit myuncchart.org to sign up. Tar Heels shoot better than 50% for the second consecutive game. Shot 53.7 in this one. Not the highest percentage of the year. That's still the Tennessee Tech game. But Heels shot 55% against Miami. Also the second straight game, Carolina has shot 60% or better in the second half. It was the best shooting game for the Heels from the free throw line percentage-wise this year, 15-17, 88%. And Carolina, 16-34. More than half their shots were threes in this game. But they made 47% and were absolutely white hot there at the end portion of the first half and about the first 10 minutes of the second half. I think Carolina was 8 of its first 9 from 3 in the second half. That might be wrong, but close to that. So those are your Know Your Stats feature. Last thing is that we're brought to you by StubHub. Of course, head to StubHub, grab 100% verified tickets. You know you'll get in. After all, they've been hooking up Tar Heel fans with amazing seats for more than 17 years. StubHub, official fan-to-fan ticket marketplace of Carolina Athletics. Adam, should we go to your list?
Sure.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Several very important items on the list. Our good friend Anthony Dion lets us know, Jones.
Okay.
DaBaby.
Oh, yeah. This was informative. No, yeah. I appreciated this tweet.
We mentioned we were frustrated that DaBaby and Lil Baby,
yeah,
their names were so similar. And Anthony Dion lets us know that DaBaby was originally Baby Jesus, but he used DaBaby in a song and it stuck. So, I mean, what are you going to do? If that's like Big Grits. If it sticks, there's nothing you can do about it. You got to just go with it.
Yeah.
So that, I understand that a little better, but I still feel like DaBaby's friends should have said, look, I know you're riding this DaBaby train, but I feel like you're going to get confused with Lil Baby. Maybe they're going to have that talk with him in the future. I don't know. I had a question for you, which was, who do you feel like is more of an obstructionist? Sebastian the Ibis.
Come on now. You're just trying to get me angry.
Buzz Williams.
Okay. Okay.
Or Testudo.
No. Oh, Testudo. Ever since, this is not a new phenomenon with the coaches. Since they extended the coaching box,
right,
at home, our radio location, which is awesome, is like right on the edge of the opposing coach's box. And so I mean, I bet I missed 30% of the Virginia Tech game because Buzz Williams was in front of me the entire – like, somehow, no matter where the ball was, he would be in the way somehow. Now, frustrating, yes, but I understand why it happens.
A lot of people say that when you play defense, you have to see man and ball.
Yeah, I could see neither.
I think Buzz Williams actually wants to see man and Jones.
Yeah, I could see neither, especially – The right sideline, right corner of the way the Tar Heels shoot in the first half, I couldn't see. And then kind of like where Nasir Little turned it over, that play you were talking about, yeah. Like that area of the court, could not see at all on that other side of the court. So it was a little bit challenging. If I said something wrong or if I was completely wrong and you're like, wow, Jones stinks, but he's normally doesn't stink this bad, then it was probably because Buzz Williams was in my way. But again, part of the game, Adam. That's just you got to if you're in it to win it, you got to understand the rules.
What?
Trademark that retweet. So, the other candidate is absolutely inexcusable, and that is that stupid mascot from Miami,
Sebastian the Ibis,
who I have to say. Like, one of the more recognizable mascots in the country. Like, I think people know, like, say, oh, yeah, that's Miami's mascot, right? I mean, they know who it is.
It's not a different Ibis.
Right. He does that thing where he pulls his beak to either side. You know exactly what I mean.
I can see you doing it.
You can see it in your mind right now. So, I think as a mascot, Sebastian the Ibis, the first bird that returns after a hurricane.
Sure.
I think as a mascot, Sebastian has filled his role very well in his career. But he has no business standing on the sideline, essentially on the court during a game. And I got to say, Adam, you were sitting next to me in Coral Gables. There was a lot of just body and foot traffic all around us. And you, myself, Sea Devil Ben Alexander, our chief network engineer, and Big Grits, we're all kind of jammed into a very small space as it was anyway. So then when you have fans all around you, not that we don't love fans, but our personal space was being violated.
I think it's one thing if the fans are like behind you in the space behind you.
Yeah.
You kind of expect that. But in Miami, the fans are between you and the game.
Yeah.
Like just walking back and forth, conversing.
I think I said this on the air. It was weird. I think maybe the Tar Heels turned it over or something right before halftime, and Miami got the ball. And
they
was,
all left.
It was like 3 seconds left. And I really think that some people thought that the half was over because there was people just started streaming in front of us and walking out of their seats. And it's like, well, wait a second. Your team has the ball and has at least a chance to do something.
Sebastian the Ibis, for some reason in the second half, elected to sit like at midcourt in a chair very close to us.
I think he ran into the referee one time. One of the officials.
Come on, Sebastian the Ibis. You got to have a little more savvy.
That reminds me, we really hadn't said anything about the Miami game. And I don't know necessarily just because it was followed up by this Virginia Tech game. I think Carolina did what it needed to do on the road. And the shots by Cam Johnson and Kenny Williams there in the second half when Miami was trying to get back in the lead or try to cut Carolina. Carolina had opened up kind of a small lead, you know, 6 or 7, but could never really get away. And the Canes were trying to push it down to 2 or 1. And Cam and Johnson and Kenny Williams each hit big shots. Thought that was an important stretch. Little, I thought, again, was good. His numbers weren't as gaudy because he only played, I think it was 13 minutes because of foul trouble. I thought Luke May played well again, even though he was saddled a little bit with foul trouble in that game. So, simply because it was followed by this Virginia Tech game, Adam, I don't know any necessarily huge topics to talk about out of Miami other than it's another road ACC win. And no matter who you're playing, those are precious, and Carolina went down there and did what it needed to do.
And only the fourth time in the Roy Williams era that Carolina's been 3-0 on the road in the league, and you've got a chance to get 4-0 next week at Georgia Tech. I mean, as we talked about before, Miami's been a team that's given Carolina some trouble no matter who they've got, no matter what the personnel is, because Jim Larrañaga has a good idea of how to beat the Tar Heels. So to beat them, no matter how depleted their numbers are, and I know Miami thinks they had nothing to do with the fact that they only have 7 players, even though possibly debatable, So it'll be interesting to see if they still have the same team when they come back to Chapel Hill, or if they get Dwan Hernandez back. They all act like he's Wilt Chamberlain, so maybe he is. But I think it's also a good win because Miami started out doing stuff that the Tar Heels had trouble stopping because they kept driving to the basket and Carolina would either let them go or foul them. And Anthony Lawrence was going crazy, but Carolina made some adjustments and figured it out and were able to slow them down. So I think that's a good sign.
I don't know if this is true. I feel like Anthony Lawrence plays well against Carolina every time. And he's a solid ACC player. So, I mean, he's had a very good career. He's played a lot for Miami in that career. But I always feel like he's like a little notch ahead against the Tar Heels. Also, man, Chris Likes is tough to guard. He is just such a little jitterbug out there. But I thought he took a three-pointer in that game that was – not a good shot when it was like a 5-point game. And it didn't happen all the time, but Carolina's got some size at that perimeter. And there were a couple times where the Tar Heels just shot over him, even though he was in decent position, just because he wasn't tall enough to do anything about it. Now, having said all that, 5'7 is what he's listed. I'm not sure he's that. But he can affect the game with his ball handling ability and his ability to score.
Yeah, he's a very good player, and you would like to have him on your team. But when Carolina hit the four threes in a row, two from Cam Johnson and two from Kenny Williams, all four were over Chris Likes. And there was also a juncture where he was attempting to guard Cam Johnson, and even Cam said after the game, in hindsight, he should have been a little more aggressive, knowing that Likes was on him, demanding the ball a little closer to the basket. But that being said, he went out and shot threes over him, so that's fine too, Cam.
Sorry, I hijacked your list there.
Oh, that's fine. So we mentioned Testudo in passing, but I don't know if we've ever fully talked about Testudo's giant turtle head on the pod. Because
please explain, Adam.
There was a time when the Tar Heels and Maryland were in the same conference. Long ago.
Low many years ago.
And we would have to...
I'd kind of forgotten about this until you brought it up.
We would have to go to College Park to do the baseball games.
Yeah.
And Carolina would play there every single year.
It felt like it. So that in Miami.
We'd stay at the Greenbelt Marriott.
Yeah. I do like the Greenbelt Marriott.
Why?
It had the best waffles of any place I've ever gone.
That's right. So there was that. But the downside was...
They really were good, dude. You can't lie. They were good.
The downside was you were in College Park.
Yeah.
So the waffles only lasted you till like noon, and then after that you had 12 hours of College Park till you could start thinking waffles again. So the Maryland baseball accommodations were unique in that we were outside.
They weren't very good.
We were sort of semi-outside, but basically we were outside.
We at least had a roof over our head, which I can't say the same for some other places in the league.
Yeah. Wasn't there one year where we'd had no roof, though? I feel like we were, like, outside the press box one year.
Maybe.
But so one year, we were just chronicling the exploits of the Diamond Heel Warriors, and probably the Tar Heels were pitching great and scrapping together some runs, and Maryland probably had a crafty lefty who had, like, a one-hitter through eight innings, but then Jay Cox let the air out of the balloon and jacked a homer. And at some point during the game, Testudo, the Maryland mascot, not a real turtle, but in a turtle costume, not a turtle in a half shell, kept walking back and forth in front of us.
Yeah.
And then finally, Testudo elected to just stand in front of us with his enormous turtle body blocking our view.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. Testudo's head, Adam, it's big.
Yeah.
Yeah, it blocks a lot of view.
A lot of the diamond.
Yeah, I need to see the baseball diamond.
And in my memory, I don't know if this occurred.
Probably.
I think we referenced the fact that Testudo was obstructing us, and Testudo kind of, like, turned around and gave us the side turtle eye.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like, I hear you, but I'm not moving. My shell's staying right here.
He can't move quickly. He's a turtle.
Come on, Testudo. Your role is to go out and make children happy, not to obstruct the broadcast.
Yeah, really. There have been some dust-ups with mascots through the years.
Oh, we'll get to that.
It's a pot after dark.
So your AP rankings of obstructionists would be Buzz Williams number one.
No, well, I think, at least Buzz Williams has the right to be there. I mean, as far as the infuriating part, Sebastian the Ibis is above Buzz. I mean, Buzz is coaching and doing something. Sebastian the Ibis is the mascot. He shouldn't be there.
Okay. Testudo right below Sebastian the Ibis.
Those are two big mascot hits right there.
If we had done this pod 10 years ago, Testudo might have had a shot at number one.
It's, you know, it's so long ago.
Let's see.
It's like Tar Heels Davidson in the Southern Conference or something.
Christopher tweeted at us and wanted to know if the Ibis was going to end up in Blue Jay territory.
Ooh.
Not yet, Chris. Okay. I can't remember if we talked about this on the pod or if this was pre-existence of pod. We got a tweet from MDWDFW, who I know as being a frequent tweeter, but I cannot remember their actual name. So he or she said they were doing some research on great Tar Heel basketball shots and comebacks and things and looked at the Brian Reese shot against Wake Forest in 1992. What they noticed about this shot was it took place at the wrong end of the court.
Mm.
It took place in front of the Wake Forest bench. If you don't remember this game, Carolina was down by 20 in the second half.
Yeah.
And but no one remembers this because it was the same week as the Bloody Montrose game. It was like 3 days later.
It was the next game.
Yeah, the very next home game. So you had, in 1 week, you had the Bloody Montrose game, which was actually also a really good game, 75-73. And then like 3 days later, you had Carolina down by 20 in the second half, and they come back and win on a Brian Reese, like, put-back jumper at the buzzer.
Davis will inbound the ball backcourt to Brian Reese. Clock running down. Reese going front court against Rodney Rogers. Drives, penetrates, shots up, short. They battle for the ball. Reese going to take another shot. It's good! It's good! Carolina wins! Carolina wins! Brian Reese follows up his missed shot. And Carolina has beaten Wake Forest 80-78.
Anybody care for some wine and cheese?
That's a good one.
But it was against... But it was at the wrong end, because if you've watched Carolina in the Smith Center, you know that in the second half, Carolina shoots in front of the Carolina bench.
Yeah.
And that's customary in college basketball.
Right.
Second half, you shoot in front of your own bench. That's just the way it is. Have we talked about this on the pod?
No. I was perplexed. I didn't know the answer.
I know the answer. I know that surprises you. I actually have useful information. So several years ago, I think it was like around the time of the 30th anniversary of the Smith Center, somewhere in there, we were researching big shots, and this one came up. And we had this same exact question. Why did he take this shot in front of the Wake Forest bench? Why was Carolina going that way? Well, so later that calendar year, Carolina went to Maui.
Okay.
And Dave Odom is the head honcho of the Maui Invitational.
Yeah.
And he was there. He was also the coach of Wake Forest in this game.
Oh, so not later in the year that Reese hit the shot.
Oh, no.
Later when you were having this discussion.
Yes, of course.
Okay.
So, like, fall of 2016.
Okay.
Carolina goes to Maui. Dave Odom's there. So, and I had asked Freddie Kiger, who, as we know, knows everything.
Yeah.
He didn't know the answer. So, went to Dave Odom at the Maui Invitational, said, Dave Odom, got an important question for you about a game that took place 25 years ago. I'm sure you remember everything about it.
75 minutes later, Dave Odom's explanation.
That's right. And he was very kind, and I also got the Tar Heels invited back in 4 years. I'm going to use all my Marriott rewards points. And so what he said was that the visiting team had the option of which way they wanted to go to start the game. I don't know if this is still the case or not, but at that time it was. And he elected to go opposite just to mess with Dean Smith. He said there was absolutely no reason other than he just kind of wanted to be a pain and make Carolina do something unfamiliar, and that's what he did. And what it got him was the biggest comeback in Carolina program history. Thank you, Dave Odom.
Adam, that was some really good research.
That's what I'm saying. Went right to the source.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Randolph Childress wasn't available, so I had to go to Dave Odom. Every once in a while, you learn something on the pod. And it's worthwhile. Speaking of learning something on the pod, we got a good email, as we so often do, from our international friends.
This was, when I read this email, Adam, I actually, it brought a smile to my face. It legitimately, not like a, I'm not saying that to like act like it was just because it's great. Like, I legitimately was like, oh, that makes me happy.
It was like a vacation from life.
It was a little vacation from life reading this email.
Although I believe over there they'd call it a holiday from life. So this email comes from Joe Cadell. He writes...
Mackerel Jordan.
He writes, greetings once again from the UK. Dropping y'all a quick line to let you know that the Tar Heel Sports Network had a small but dedicated audience in Canterbury, England last night.
Small audience.
It's in England.
In Canterbury.
The exchange rate is so much higher.
We're big over there.
And he includes a video of this small but dedicated audience. We garnered more than a few odd stares from passersby, but we're awfully glad to hear the happy results of last night's game in real time.
This is the Miami game we're talking about.
Right. Shortly after this video clip, which none of you can see because this is a podcast, Jones described a physical Miami defender, which, by the way, this was funny, being just about, quote, on a second date with Coby White. That was some good stuff. Jill grinned, then deadpanned, looked at me, and said, retweet. Now it's officially a thing on this side of the pond, too. Cheerio, big grits, Joe, Jill, Jack, and Teddy.
See, Joe, this is how this went. Chris likes aggressive defense on Coby White. The witty comment of it being a second date. Leaky Black's coolness. Saying retweet. Boom, all to you in England.
Yeah.
That's just how it happens.
Worldwide.
Yeah. Connect the dots.
We had some discussion last time of optometrist versus ophthalmologist.
Yep, yeah, we did.
Because science is important.
Makes sense.
Nathan Barber sent us a very informative email.
Yeah, it really was.
I mean, it was packed full of knowledge. And, I mean, I guess I could read it so all you could learn, too. For practical purposes from a patient perspective, the only difference is that an ophthalmologist can perform surgery. Although, it's Nathan's understanding, some states' optometrists can also perform some surgical procedures. I don't know.
Please be careful.
While it's true that ophthalmologists are MDs who have had additional eye training after med school, both are qualified to manage diseases and dispense glasses or contacts, and both are doctors. Optometrists are doctors of optometry, or ODs.
You're an OG and they're ODs.
But they should be called doctor, as should I. In fact, optometrists spend all their postgrad education focused on eye care, while ophthalmologists must do all the regular medical school training. No thank you, sir.
Both things sound hard to me.
Now, Nathan knows all this because of a connection to the 2017 national champions.
Right.
As you would expect, he began dating his wife when she was in optometry school and previously held every misconception that Adam mentioned in today's pod. Did I mention misconceptions? I think I was just spewing facts. She went to school in Memphis, which inspired us to take a drive down I-40 in March of 2017 for a couple basketball games, which we enjoyed immensely. Like Luke May, we both reported to work the next morning.
Nice.
Unlike Luke May, we had two racks of ribs in the trunk. Nice. Not sure who's the winner there. And Nathan's apartment was two blocks from the Blue Plate Cafe.
This is circle of life right here.
While we enjoyed our semi-regular weekend breakfast there, sadly, we never ordered the big grits. No doubt Nathan has sat at Katrina's table. I think that's almost a guarantee.
Yeah, no doubt.
So we now know everything about optometrists and ophthalmologists. I'm glad that we've cleared that all up. I wanted to update everyone.
Goodness gracious.
I have documentation.
This list is meaty.
Yeah. Well, no guest. I mean, we got to blow it out.
Yeah.
Year-end CVS report. For my dad, things are looking good in 2018. He's in the top. This is a printout straight from CVS, so you know it's right. He's in the top 2% of savers in North Carolina. Top 2%.
Yeah.
In the year 2018, he saved $619.
Gosh, that's a fair amount of money.
It also says he could share a screenshot of his savings status on social media with hashtag extra care. I don't foresee that happening.
No, I don't think that's happening.
I don't think that's going to occur. They've broken out the savings. He earned $135 in extra bucks rewards.
Yeah.
You saved $180 with sale prices. So if you're following along with your math, you know you saved $304 with coupons. Yeah. $304.
Let's go play the machines, Adam.
Dad visited them 39 times in 2018. So not quite once per week. That's a little lower than I expected, well, honestly.
1.5 times per month.
Last year, you received 548 coupons. You used 89.
It should have been like 542.
Yeah, I mean, that's 89 used out of 548 received. I think we can increase that.
Basically,
a
what you're saying is that your dad, just like Nas Little, he's performing at a high level, but there's a lot of growth that can still occur.
Yeah, and I think he's been watching film. Like, this is the film. He's learned from this, and you can expect probably, like, incredible performance in 2019.
Okay, this is probably on your list, but I'm going to intervene.
Okay.
I'm not sure we've ever been sent a tweet as many times as we were sent this tweet.
This is the most demanded how can you justify that ever.
Yeah.
The people demand it.
So let's go ahead and cue.
Yeah, do it.
I do not have to justify.
How can you justify what you've done?
How can you justify sacrifice and hallelujah?
How can you possibly justify that?
So, Adam's boys, and by this you know that I mean Creighton men's basketball.
Right.
Sent out a tweet on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Had the little eye emoji.
Mm-hmm.
And then said, making their debut on Monday, the newest alternative jersey for men's basketball, the, quote, baby blues. So, I mean, I don't know the RGB values of these jerseys, Adam. They're not, I don't know. The more I look at them, they're pretty close to Tar Heel blue.
Yes.
They might be just a shade lighter, just a hair lighter than Tar Heel blue. And I can't even, I mean, I'm just scrolling through my timeline or the pod's timeline. I mean, I see the picture 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times that we were quote tweeted the picture of these jerseys with the need for your reaction. So, Adam, I'm going to exit and leave the floor to you.
The worst news I have about these jerseys is that Creighton wore them on Monday night and they won. They beat Georgetown 91-87. So they're probably going to wear them again. I'm probably going to have to see them again. What did my heart good was that even when the Creighton basketball account sent out this tweet, a solid 50% of the responses to that tweet were people saying, you're just copying Carolina. I'm glad that Creighton's social media flunkies had to look through all that and go, oh, our jerseys look just like Carolina. Yeah, that's a good point. Didn't think of that. Like, and here's another thing, Creighton. It's not called an alternative jersey. You're not, like, listening to punk rock in the 80s or, like, R.E.M. What's the Frequency, Kenneth?
What's the Frequency, Kenneth? This y'all been so dream.
It's not an alternative jersey. It's an alternate jersey. You can't even use the right words. We'll just eliminate the fact that you blatantly ripped off the Tar Heels and are trying to steal a color that you haven't worn in 30 years. By the way, you're 11-8.
I feel like I need to do this just to make you happy.
Choo choo. Leaky Train would, if the Leaky Train saw the alternative jerseys on the tracks, it would flatten him like Wile E. Coyote.
We got some more good. I appreciate the finding of all these train gifts that people send to us.
I never knew there were so many train gifts. I thought those were kind of limited, but evidently they're not.
We get some good ones.
And we've got like 20 games left in the season, so what's going to happen?
Adam, you got to quickly give the update on what you saw occur when Leakey came out of the tunnel tonight.
Oh, yeah. So I like to hide right by the tunnel where the Tar Heels enter and leave the floor.
And scare them as they walk.
Yeah, and then I jump out and go, Brandon Huffman! And so they have a palatial setup for me down there, and people feed me grapes and fan me with palm fronds, and I watch the Tar Heels as they enter and exit the floor.
Essentially John Montgomery's office.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's like a mobile John Montgomery office. And so as each player comes out the first time, like an hour before the game, usually there's some young fans there, and the young fans have items for them to sign. And sometimes there's creepy, like, older guy fans who have, like, 14 items for them to sign.
Not okay.
That's weird. And so they'll call to the players and say, oh, Kobe, and Kobe will usually go over and sign several items before he goes out to warm up. So Leakey was one of the last guys to come out on Monday night. And someone, it looked to be perhaps a mother with her, a couple of kids maybe, and the kids were calling to Leakey, and Leakey, no surprise here, immediately went over to sign autographs, yeah, pose for pictures, sign casts, help them with their homework,
yeah,
and everything else. And the mom said, Leakey, we're on the Leakey train. And Leakey gave him the head nod. He knew what was up.
Nice.
So once you've entered the home tunnel at the home games, it's only a matter of time before it's worldwide.
Adam, anything else on your list?
No, I believe that's it.
Okay. I would like to give Adam a quick little mini what up.
What up? People look at there, what's up?
This what up goes to former Tar Heel offensive lineman, Arthur Smith.
Yeah.
You remember Arthur Smith?
I do.
Arthur Smith on Monday was announced as the new offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Like, I did know that Arthur Smith was in coaching. I had no idea that he was like a step away from being the offensive coordinator for an NFL team, and now he is. So congratulations to Arthur Smith. That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah. We should also give a what up to our boy, Yash Krishnan.
Yeah, for sure.
We got to take an arms crossed picture with him on Monday night before the game.
I got to tell you something. He's already got the serious face down pat much better than I ever can.
I feel like he might have been practicing in the mirror.
Yeah.
If you don't know Yash, he's good friends with Luke May. He is also the kid who you might have seen who was identified by ESPN as, quote, that kid who talked trash to Kyrie Irving about Duke losing to Gonzaga. And what Yash told me on Monday night was, and Yash's mom said they were disappointed that ESPN had cut out the rest of that video, because apparently right before Yash talked trash to Kyrie Irving, he had a whole bunch of Carolina stuff up on his walls. And so he was making Kyrie like walk through it photo by photo. Like, here's Luke May hitting the shot against Kentucky. Here's a picture of the Tar Heels raising the championship trophy in 2017. I'd like to see that unedited video.
Yeah.
But it
Good job,
was,
Yash.
This was Yash's first home game this year. He as you might remember, he watched the Gonzaga game with the, as we know, awesome Boston Carolina club. But this was the first time he had been in the Smith Center this year, so great to see him, and glad he's so adept at the arms crossed serious face.
Two quick things before we get out of here. Number one, the win on Monday night was number 210 for Roy Williams in ACC contest, whether it's ACC regular season or ACC tournament. Those wins count in there. He is now tied for third most ACC wins of any coach. He's tied with Gary Williams. He's behind Mike Krzyzewski and Dean Smith. And he's likely not going to catch those two gentlemen. But also, I mean, Mike Krzyzewski's been coaching in the league since the early 80s. And we know Coach Smith was here for over 30 years as well.
Coach Williams did take all his wins and losses.
And so, just to congratulate, just yet another number to show you how good Roy Williams is as a head coach. You don't need any more of those. We know how awesome he is. But just another number to show you the level of success that he has had for a long time. And then also, unless I zoned out, you didn't say this already, where we got the tweet at the end of the Virginia Tech game from Jordan, who said that the Heels were down double digits.
We haven't talked about that.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I hadn't like completely spaced and forgotten that you said this already. So Jordan sent us this tweet, said the Heels were down by double digits. And largest deficit was 9, but we get the point.
Yeah.
When Jordan's doorbell rang, he said his new Tar Heel shoes were delivered. He put them on. The Tar Heels went on a 20-0 run. He says he may never take these shoes off again. I think we can all agree Jordan has to keep the shoes on. Sleep in the shoes.
Right.
Just shower with your legs hanging out of the shower so as to not get the shoes wet. But Jordan, now, hey, Jordan, it's all on you now, dude. It's all on you. Don't mess it up.
The consensus on Twitter was to never take them off. I think there's an open question as to whether you never take them off or you never put them on unless it's game time. What? Because we got 8 days coming up, Jones.
Yeah.
What if Jordan wears them and steps in a mud puddle or something, or there's snow where he lives, and they get infected by the weather, and then the mojo's gone? So I think that's a question that Jordan's going to have to wrestle with. Do you wear them all the time, or are those your game shoes?
Jordan, I can't give you the right answer, but simply know that the Tar Heel season rides on your decision.
You and Tar Heel Bird have the power to send the Tar Heels on a big winning streak if you do it correctly.
Adam, anything else?
No.
All right. We'll be back later this week. We have some really good guests lined up. We fully anticipate speaking to these folks, but they haven't happened yet, so I don't want to tell you who they are, just in case something wonky happens. We have 8 interviews scheduled at this moment. Is that right?
There are 8 pod interviews on the calendar confirmed with said guest.
So we're going to be bringing you some good guest stuff here in the coming weeks. Plus, of course, talking Tar Heel hoops as we move through ACC season. Okay. Big choice here, Adam. It's first time in a long time.
Yeah.
That we got to make a call on who's going to give us the see you later big grits. I kind of leaning towards Roy Williams.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Two great minds think alike.
Man.
Let's let the Hall of Fame head coach of the Tar Heels, Roy Williams, send us out, along with the Rizzo, of course, in another edition of the Carolina Insider.
Hi, I'm Roy Williams. We're signing off right here, and we want to say see you later. Big grits. Oh, my gosh, big grits. I can't wait to see you face to face.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.